Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap. Co-hosting Mr. Jabron Clement, and also featuring Chilling with the Champ with Mr. Layman Brewster, former heavyweight champion. But hey, we got a lot of things to cover tonight. I'm going to go kind of off our usual beaten path, and we are going to talk a little social media and some of the other things that are happening in the world. I mean, we don't live in a bubble, so I don't think that we should try to stick our head in the sand like a bunch of ostriches. But right now, let's introduce my co-host, Mr. Jabron Clement. What's going on tonight, Jabron?
Not much, JK, not much.
Well, you know, like I was saying, I'm going to go off a little bit off the beat path tonight. You know, we do have the big presidential debate coming up tomorrow. But I would like to ask you a little bit, especially, you know, when we're talking about millennials, which is, I would say, a group that would be closer to your age and more of an association, just simply because of your age. What do you think about the way things have been handled in Charlotte?
I really haven't kept up because after I heard the story and the information that came out, it's just like, how much more can I take, you know? So you might have to fill me in on a little bit of or be more specific on exactly with your question.
Well, basically what I'm asking you is, you know, what is your opinion of what is happening in Charlotte? Do you believe that the situation has been handled correctly by both sides, and I'm including the violence. Do you believe that we never want to say that justice is, I mean, that, you know, these things are justified, but there has to be some way to bring attention to what is happening to the plight of young black men. Now, I've told you stories of, you know, some things that have happened to me back in the, you know, 60s and 70s. But the reason why I'm talking to you first about it is because this is your generation's fight. Right now, you know, we're past that. But, you know, I mean, especially when you hear one of the candidates talking about bringing back stop and frisk in New York, which is something that your generation had to deal with a lot more than mine. So, you know, as a young black man, what do you consider your role and your plight in today's society?
Well, I don't believe in violence, retaliation to try to make a statement. Far as, you know, rioting and, you know, vandalizing, I don't approve of that. But in the same sentence, I don't approve of the things that brought those people to that point. And I think people from different avenues have their opinions on the situation, but no one is really listening. The thing is, everybody has something to say, but how many of those same people are really listening? The same way with the Kaepernick situation, like, people was voicing their opinion, but how many people was really listening to what he was saying and why he did what he did instead of just stereotyping him or trying to put him in a box? And I just feel for the officers that are hard-working officers who take their job seriously. And I think people getting racism misconstrued with just the color of blue. It don't care if you're white, black, if it's just about if you're blue, you know. The same way I feel about, you know, the government. You know, they want to talk about Republican, Democrat. At the end of the day, it's all the same. That's just my opinion. You know, I mean, they're just puppets, in a sense. Everything is scripted. You know, it's nothing genuine when it comes to politics, unfortunately. So, I don't know, JK. I'm not the most politically correct person that you want to be getting into these discussions with. So, I'm going to just leave it at that.
All right, well, I mean, you know, we are all entitled to our opinions. I mean, that's all they are. I mean, it's not like any of us are president or governor or anything. Before I express my opinion, let me go to Layman. Layman, and I might make you uncomfortable, too. So if this is something that you don't want to talk about, or, you know, you would rather keep it private, then I can understand. But one of the groups that took a lot of punishment down in Charlotte for protecting or for voicing their rights and was kind of labeled as a militant group along with Black Lives Matter were the Black Hebrews. Layman, your site has a lot of stuff, you know, about that. Now, I don't know if you wanted to necessarily talk about that on this program, but do you feel that you know, that particular group has been shown in a bad light, and that the only thing that they're really there for is for protection and to try to unite the brothers and sisters in a positive manner? Or are they, you know, the hoods that are coming in from out of state trying to incite violence?
Hey, man. Well, first of all, I just want to say hello to all the listeners out there, to Jabron, say hello to you, JK, and just say, man, you know, I'm definitely down to have this conversation, because I'm always going to give you my version of the unadulterated truth, and I will say anything I say out of my mouth speaking on these issues. Do not believe anything I say, but do your research off of everything I say, and it won't hurt my feelings for you to come back and debate me on it, because I'm never going to say anything out of my mouth that I don't feel like I can walk on sure ground about, because my reputation means everything, and the 40 laws of power says reputation means everything, guard it with your life. I don't know exactly which law of the 40 laws that is, but it definitely stuck out in my mind. And so with that being said, I want to say on the behalf of the Hebrew Israelites, you have to understand, first of all, a lot of people, the majority of people, do not know who the real, for lack of a better word, Jews are. And so I say, don't believe me. Go read Deuteronomy 28:15-68 and tell me who they talking about. But then you can go back even further than that, and you can go to Genesis 15:13, when the Most High was talking to Abraham, and he said, "No, but surely that thy seed will be again taken by ship to a new land," you know, and everything it described, it really described, you know, cutting to the chase, it described the black people. It said that, you know, all the things that we have suffered. I mean, you can't say the Jew ish, because ish is to be like. That ain't to say some of them are not a part of the true Hebrew Israelites by blood, but very, very few, because you remember Israel was made a state in 1948. And a lot of people don't know that the reason why a lot of the wars were even fought, including World War One and Two, was so that they could get the state of Israel and try to make it again a state. But remember, Christ said the Messiah, we won't see, I'm sorry, it was said, I don't know if it was Christ, but it was said that we won't see Israel again, the true Hebrew Israelites that was chased out of there, until the Messiah returns. Now, if you know your history, you would know that we were scattered around the whole world. That's why I say that I'm not saying that some of those people that are in what we call them Khazars, not all of them are Khazars, meaning they are from Europe, you know, Ashkenazis by way of Japheth, which was the second son of Noah. I mean, you know, I'm just breaking it down. If you look under his lineage, it says Ashkenazi. So how could you be an Ashkenazi Jew when to be a Jew, you would have to be a descendant of the firstborn son, which was Shem, because Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, whose name was changed to Israel, came through Shem. So then we know it's not Ham, because Ham, if you look up in the Zondervan Dictionary, it says Ham, the progenitor of all Africans, not the Negroes. So who's the Negro and who's the African? Now, to white people, no disrespect, but if they look at us sitting next to Africans, we all look alike. Just like if we look at them, we can't tell them apart. I can't tell you who's Russian, who's from Ireland, who's from England, who's from Australia or France. I can't do that. But they can look at each other just like the Asians can look at each other. I can't tell who's Japanese, Chinese, Vietnamese, or any of those knees. So what I'm saying is, let's just be correct here, because in 70 AD, our people was conquered by the Roman Empire. We ran, and the Bible said, he told us to flee into the mountains, the same mountains where they took Christ when he went into Egypt, to blend in, the same place where Moses died that people don't even know he was going to the land of milk and honey, which was Israel. Remember, Moses didn't cross over. God didn't allow him. He didn't allow Michael, the son of Nun, and I think only one other person out of all the people that left Egypt at that time. So when we fled in 70 A.D., fleeing from Roman captivity, because the thing is, they weren't taking prisoners. They were killing you. They weren't enslaving you. They were killing you. So what they did, they fled into Africa, and then it was called Negro Land. If you do your research and look from the top of Ethiopia and right below Egypt, all the way across from the Sudan, the Congo, all the way to Nigeria, that was all called Negro Land. Now, I'll remind you, the Zondervan Dictionary, which the Zondervan Dictionary is actually the dictionary that is recognized by every single religion around the world, says that Ham, which was the progenitor of all Africans, remember, they said Ham is the progenitor of all Africans, not the Negro. So that's telling who we are as a people. That's why he said a remnant of us will not be killed no matter what. Now let me ask you, when the last time that our people have experimented on people, put people on a ship, put people in a slavery? Our people have never enslaved anybody. We've never experimented on anybody. We never go out and kill anybody. So that lets you know who Judah is. He said we're a special race above all. That's why we're the best basketball players. We're the best fighters. We're the best football. We're great at everything that we do. But because of who we are, everybody hates us. And this is no different. See, police started back with slavery. Remember, they started patrols that would patrol the countryside to keep the slaves from running up north when they start offering freedom to them up north. Well, once slavery was over with, they still kept their patrols. And so it grew into what we call today the police. You know, citizens on patrol, which it means cops, you know. So, I mean, we're still facing today, because if you look at the articles that has been written, you would know that the neo-Nazis, the Klan, have infiltrated into our justice system. So there are judges, or lawyers, or police. And so we wonder why we can't get a fair break, because remember, there was a curse put on us in the wilderness when God said that we was going to go into captivity again. And he said it was going to be a people from a nut. And everything describes to the T who we are, except the only people that don't know it and don't believe it is our own people. But he even said that we was going to lose our heads and not know who we were. And then there's another people who he said in Revelations 2:9, I know those who claim to be Jews and who are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. I didn't say it. He said it. The Most High said it. So if anybody got a problem with what I said, take that up with God. You know what I mean? Because I'm not here to point fingers at nobody, because, you know, I got my own demons. But if you want to know a little bit of history, see, our history was, hey, you guys are slaves, descended of slaves, and you free. So, hey, I built this country. But, you know, you still got to work now, because I said that you know what? All this has been prophesied, everything that was going to happen. You look at the first slave ship, which was 1619. He said 400 years, so 400 years would be 2019? Hey, again, don't believe me. Take it up with the Most High. He said that Saturday was a Sabbath. But well, the King of England, they changed that. You know, the Roman, the Council of Nicaea and all that crap, man. So I know who I am, and I will argue that with anybody, but if you ask, I will tell you. And if your feelings are hurt, do your research. And that's all I got to say.
Okay. Devron has tried to be politically correct, and I can understand. I mean, you know, he's a father. He has young children to raise. And he has a certain image to uphold. Layman, I asked you to explain to me about the Black Hebrews and whatnot, and it explains who we are supposedly as a nation. And when I say a nation, I'm using the Muslim black the black Muslim term, not the Islamic term. The thing that really really pisses me off is that it takes a tragedy or a group of tragedies, a series of tragedies, before we can even talk to each other. We are so busy trying to outdo one another and you know, who has the biggest car, who's got the biggest bank account, that we have all lost sight of our humanity. And that's not just, I'm not just talking about black people. I'm talking about the human race.
What I was bred into us, man, you know, the system has bred us to think, feel, and believe that way. You know, I mean, just like you talk about the Hebrews, the Hebrew Israelites that showed up, you know. I try to tell people, those guys go strictly by the Bible. Anything that they say, and I'm not saying all of them, but I'm going to say the majority of them, it sounds harsh, but all they doing is repeating everything that the Bible say. And that's the difference, because, you know, when we were first, our ancestors came to this country, they was not allowed to read or write, and so they never changed the Bible. And then when they were able to read and write, they could not have church unless there was a white man in the church that watched over what they said. And even to this day, that's why they're non-for-profits, because they'll lose their non-for-profit status if they talk about certain things in the Bible. And, of course, they ain't going to talk about it. I mean, they talk about these seminary schools and this and that, man. But these Hebrews out there that came down here, they came to spread the word. They came to talk about what the Bible said. And really, if you listen, he's telling you, God, you can't be mad at, I just want to say, for lack of word, better word, you can't be mad at white people, because they are fulfilling the prophecy. They are doing everything that God said, God allowed them to do, that he has allowed them to do, and everything that he is allowing them to do right now as we speak. I mean, all the stuff that we've been through, this is their time to reign. This is their heaven. This is their life on earth, their heaven on earth, if you will. And these brothers, now this is the thing that I do say. I don't want the Israelites to be out there preaching that hate and talking about the white man, devil, this and that, because God said, love thy brother, thy sister, because all white people came, if you know your biblical history, you know, Esau and Jacob, they were twins in the womb. He said there'll be two nations. So what is a nation? Nationalities. And so we got two manner of people. And so we're supposed to the best of our ability, work together, love each other. And, you know, that's just the way it's supposed to be, man. But you talk about all these denominations and this and that. And I know I'm kind of going off a little bit, AK, but I just want to say this, man. It's like everybody go off about this and that and all these different religions. Well, you know, Christ didn't have a religion, you know, and people of the Bible, they didn't have a religion. They had a belief. They had a faith, you know, is a language in Israelite, or the children by blood of Jacob, who, as you know, had his name changed to Israel. So, you know, I just think that our people, the reason why we're so disconnected is because we're disconnected with the Bible, because we don't read the curses he said that it would be confusion among us. He said we wouldn't have leaders. He said that we would have women and other men will lay with them during slavery. And everything that happened through slavery, he talked about. He said we would plant fields and we wouldn't eat of it. He said we would build houses. We built the White House. We didn't get to sleep in it. And just to make it clear, and I'm definitely not knocking Obama, but what I'm saying is Obama is a Hamite. Obama is not a African American, a Negro. He's not of Negro blood. He is of Caucasian and Hamite. I mean, I mean, that's just putting it out there the way it is, man. So, you know, it's like our people, the problem with us is that we Sabbath. We go out and eat pork. We do all the things that God told us not to, and then we wonder why black people got the biggest, we have the biggest ones is diabetes and all the other diseases fall on us. Why? Because we our diet, okay, well, we were slaves, yeah, but why are you still eating pig feet? Why are you still eating oxtail, all the stuff that you ain't supposed to? We got to get back to keeping the law sight using commandments of the Most High so that we can come together as a people and get rid of this confusion. And that's what I say about it.
We should have this discussion, you and I, about the Bible, because I kind of view the Bible as an instrument of slavery, because every nation, I mean, when you know, the Spanish first came over here, they brought the Bible to the Indians. And I mean, if you want to talk about somebody that's in a much worse plight than we are, even though we were brought over here in ships, I mean, you know. But anyway, we're getting way off the subject here.
But we had the Torah, remember? We didn't have the Bible. They wrote this stuff in the Bible. That's why it became the Bible with the new chapters. Well, the Old Testament were the first five books that was given to Moses.
But the thing of it, but you know, when you know, like I said, you know, when the slaves were introduced to the Bible, they were introduced to the Bible, you know, to show or to justify why they were in their plight.
Exactly.
But like I said,
that's why they didn't let them read or write.
But we've kind of lost Jabron and all this. Jabron,
No, you didn't. When you brought in about the Bible, JK, just now, about I kind of got your view on that, because it was kind of like used as an instrument of control.
Yep.
Because
they wrote this off in the Bible. They white people listen,
you know,
man. First of all, the Bible is black history.
See, here's the thing. They used the Old Testament to justify slavery, and then they used the New Testament, you know, to justify themselves as masters.
Yeah.
But bringing it back down to these modern terms and whatnot, you know, I haven't seen actual lynchings. I can't say that, but I do know. Living in New Jersey during the time that Giuliani happened to be mayor of New York, I do know what it meant to be a black man in New York City after 9 o'clock at night, especially if you were down in the subway. You would find, you know, a lot of young men, especially, you know, the guys, same age group, 18 to 25, not so much now. It's a little bit older, maybe 18 to 31. But I mean, you know, we didn't have saggy pants or nothing like that. But you know, we had our swag and whatnot. And if you walked a certain way or had your cap on a certain way, you would definitely on Friday and Saturday night, you know, be familiar with a wall somewhere in New York City. But, you know, because your fingerprints and DNA would be left on it, you know. But anyway, it seems to me, you know, like here we are 50 years later and history is repeating itself. We still have the same problems. We still are trying to put the same solution on a 50-year-old problem with a 50-year-old patch. You know, I mean, we have technology now. We have all types of resources at our fingertips You know, if people are really serious about trying to find a way to end this, because I mean, you know, it's not, you know, black or white or you know, I mean, it's a power problem. You know, I mean, some people and I you know, I've been familiar to, with a lot of police in my time, and I know that, you know, some of it is just the power of the uniform, you know, and when you say, you know, that, you know, some people come to work because, you know, this is the only place where they can feel, you know, like they are somebody, or you know, maybe you know, fulfill that hero that they have in their mind. You know, as soon as you put that uniform on them, then they think that they're Superman. And I've seen this happen in more than one case. I mean, you know, you have a cop up in a helicopter telling his wife, you know, well, the man is suspicious. Be careful. He made a suspicious move. And he's 1,000 feet up in the air. You know, you have a black officer shooting a black man, not knowing what he has in his hand. You know, and you know, a man that's supposedly somewhat impaired in some way. I mean, you know, it comes down to being humanized. I can, these are the act and the response of somebody that's at war. You know, I mean, these are the type of reflexes that you know, I had many years ago. If it moves, shoot it. You know, worry about what and who it is later. I mean, you know, this is, you know, and stop and frisk became stop or I'll shoot. You know, I mean, to me, we have the same problems. But we need to try to find new solutions. I can really get down and dirty on this, but that would be something that it would be a matter of private conversation. Jabron, let me give you a word on this, and then we'll give Layman the last word, and we'll talk a little boxing.
Well, JK, I live in Brooklyn currently. I've been residing here for 10 years, but I'm born and raised in Virginia and the Hampton Roads area, close to Jamestown. For you historians, you know a lot about Jamestown. There was some good and bad. So I've seen some... bad things. I haven't seen no lynching, but I have ran across KK Riley. I've seen some churches burn. So it's been kind of rough when I was younger, but now things have gotten a little better as far as the community-wise. But the overall aspect is, the thing that's getting to me right now is that I don't understand. We have laws in states to bear arms, but everybody who has an arm is supposed to be dangerous. So which one is it? Can somebody give me an answer on that? Because if you license to carry, you're supposed to be dangerous? Because it seems that a lot of people that are being killed are licensed to carry. If you've really been looking at the details of these stories lately, and I think that's an issue that nobody has really talked about, is the license to carry in these situations and training on how does a person that's licensed to carry is supposed to respond or notify an officer that, hey, I'm licensed to carry, look, I have my firearm. Now, what's the next step, you know? So I think that's just one of the things that the topics that we need, the community need to raise
about carrying arms, because a lot of states.
If you remember, Gibran, the one guy that got killed in the car with his girlfriend told the police that he was licensed to carry, and the policeman shot him anyway before he even saw the gun. He just told him that he was licensed to carry, and he was in a state where he was licensed to carry. So when you bring up that aspect, you almost have to bring up race, because it was somebody of another race that gave him the permit for a license to carry, but yet the person that killed him for having while he had the license to carry was the same race. So, I mean, some of these things, it's hard to bring in one without bringing in the other. And I understand where you're coming from, but, a lot of these people, that we have been talking about, whether they were black or white, did not have a chance to give an explanation, or when the guy was taking out his wallet to show him the license to carry, all of a sudden his wallet became gun-like, or whatever excuse that was used. And as you can see, the lady in Tulsa, this gentleman was shot in the back. He had his hands up in the air, walking to his van. So, like I said, to me, when you talk about police, it doesn't become about race. It becomes about the power of the uniform. And maybe I have a whole different misconception because of my past experiences with the law.
Oh, you hit it on the head, JK. I agree definitely with power. The power, I mean, not just the uniform. I mean, hey, we see it on the judge, on the stand. You see it in sports, with the power. People have power. Because I'm still trying to figure out how Adrian Broner got off of charges.
Well, that's... I can give you a couple reasons. One, he's from Cincinnati, and he has money. And you can kind of, figure out what's going on in between there. Even though Kucinich has come out for Hillary, believe me, Ohio is one of the most corrupt states there is. You could almost buy your way out of anything. Unless it's connected to a dead body, but that would also be a discussion for another time. But that includes Cleveland and the little Youngstown where I'm from, and Columbus. I mean, we're right up there with New York and New Jersey. Our little state secrets, but Layman, you want to sum this up for us and give us your final thoughts on what's happening in the country today?
Yeah, man, I'm glad you let me go last, and I appreciate it. Just hearing what you guys were saying. I'm going to repeat, I encourage everybody, I don't care what race you are, first I want you to know that in the Bible, people are talking about the God of Israel. You know, that's who he's talking about. All these things that are happening, or should I say that has happened with all these murders, is part of our curse. And again, that's in Deuteronomy 28:15-68. And I just want to read you real quick, man. I'm going to make it real quick. But it's three little passages where Genesis 15:13, he said unto Abraham, know for surety that your seed will be a stranger in the land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. Well, we know it's not the Khazars, as we would say, the Jew-ish, because ish is to be like. So we know that's not what he's talking about. Deuteronomy 28:68 says, and the Lord shall bring thee again with ships, by way whereof I spoke unto thee, and you shall see it no more. See what no more? He's talking about Israel. He said, you should be sold for bondsmen and bondswomen, and no man shall buy you, meaning nobody shall free you, buy you out of your slavery. Now, I've just given you two verses that you already know they're talking about us, and then Jeremiah 5:15 says, no, I will bring a nation upon you from afar. He said, O house of Israel, he said the Lord, it is a mighty nation, because they mighty people. I'm not going to discredit them. He said, it is a nation whose language thou knowest not, neither understandest what they say. So if you understand and put these together, well, then it's very easy to figure out, after I just told you, the Zondervan Dictionary clearly say that we are not African. And if we stand among Africans, we know they're not our people, because they don't even hang with us. You ain't never seen them up in the club with us. You ain't ever even seen them walking down the street with us. You see how they look at us in this country? They flew over here. We came on ships. And that ain't to discredit them, but because we lived among them from 70 AD until the Atlantic slave trade. But the point I'm trying to make in ending of what I'm saying is that all these things happen to us because of our curse, because of what our ancestors done when we was coming, when we were taken into the wilderness under Moses, when we turned our back on God and he put another curse. And this is when all this came about. Everything I told you in Deuteronomy 28:15-68 is everything we going through, but some people just don't want to get it through. They did DNA tests on us to even tell the majority of the people in this country, black people, the Negroes, are E1B1A, which is a haplo DNA genetic code from as a descendant from Israel, as they would say it. But because our blood type don't fit no other blood type in Africa, they E1B1B, and those are the descendants of Ham. So whenever they get ready, I'll take a blood test with everybody, and everything that my people have built through and still are going through us, that's why we have this conversation, is everything that the Bible said was written 3,000 years ago. So, yeah, they added the New Testament and all that crap because they want to write themselves in so that they could, you know, well, we ain't going to teach y'all how to read and write, but people don't even know. We were singing Kumbaya. Kumbaya means come by here, Yah, Yahweh. That means that is Hebrew Israelite. Like, and we couldn't even read or write. So it's like we just don't know who we are because God said we was going to be in a deep sleep. So that's what I want to say on that. These things are going to continue to happen. Our time is almost up in terms of our curse, and we'll see what they don't want you to know. It's just like when Moses was sent when Moses freed the people from Egypt. He said the Messiah was going to come and get us and take us out of this place and take us back to our land. Now, you ain't got to believe me. Read the Bible for yourself. They skip, dance, float around it, but it's in the Bible. But you'll never hear a preacher, no matter what color he is, talking about it. And when they talk about this and that, and they say John 3:16, well, the world he was talking about was the world of the Israelites. He was not talking to nobody else but the Gentile Israelites, because Gentile means another people. But when you, like, for instance, our people have mixed in with other races. And so, just to keep it short on you, JK, the Gentiles are other races that are not Israel's Israelites, or not Hebrews, but, you know, we're not a religious people, but, this is our law, statutes, and commandments we got to keep. But, brother, I don't want to keep too much more of your time on that, because I want to talk about Vladimir Klitschko, I want to talk about Tyson Fury, and, you know, I want to get your thoughts on the heavyweight division, you know, or what you guys think, man, and my man Deontay Wilder. So, you know, we can definitely get back to that, man, but we ain't got enough time.
Well, we're going to talk about a couple of those things, because I definitely wanted to talk about the Fury-Klitschko fight being called off for the second time. And the fact that there was no reason given. Layman, you know, I mean, this is your division. You know what goes on here. I mean, what the hell is going on? And, you know, I mean, now they're talking about stripping Fury. So what impact would this have on Deontay, considering that the winner, he was supposed to fight the winner of this, I believe he was the mandatory. Am I correct?
Correct. I do want to say, man, I think, and hey, man, you know what? Maybe I'm wrong, but again, I'm just giving my opinion. I'm an outsider looking in. I'm looking in from a fan standpoint. But I have followed Fury, and I think that he's content with the fact that he won the title. And I think that he knows if he steps into that ring with Vladimir, he's going to fight Vladimir that he was hoping didn't show up the first fight. And Vladimir is out for blood. And I think he don't want to be embarrassed after all that talk and all the running around in the press conference with the Batman costume. I think he's afraid to see he's going to get his wings clipped, because he hears I mean, we fighters, man. We never going to guys early on his game, and when Vladimir is speaking, he's speaking with authority. Unlike the last fight, I think he was going through too many personal life changes outside of his this world of boxing, with his family being a new father, his wife postpartum depression, having a new baby, just being married. I mean, all that, in my opinion, I think it really threw him off his foundation. I think he's back on his foundation. He's talking like it. He even the look in his eye, he's coming to a really fight. I think that what Tyson Fury's doing, he's just trying to milk this cow for as long as he can and get as much money as he can, because I don't think that his goal was actually to ever be a reigning champ, but to win the title. He got a gift, and I don't think that he really wants to fight Vladimir. And I think that just what the website, the social media is saying, is that he's having some type of meltdown, mental breakdown, trying to say he got mental problems. Hell, well, you know, you can't be a fighter if you ain't half crazy and half smart. So he was smart enough to get in the ring. He was smart enough to prepare. He was crazy enough to step in the ring. But I just think right now his fear, his logic of what could happen if he stepped in there with the right Vladimir on his best night, you know, I think he's afraid of that. But that's just my opinion, and I would love to hear what you guys think on that, man.
Brian, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think he's also content with the whole spotlight, the fame, the money, and just didn't get back in the gym. He kind of pulled basically like the Madonna, like, hey, I'm going to just take this money and run. And I was reading an article where I guess his father is trying to sugarcoat it, basically saying he was mentally drained too, and doing training camp, it was days where he just wasn't coming in focused, and he was, you know, he'll leave early and different things of that sort. So I guess he was content with just getting the belt. And maybe he's saying, oh, it was all easy and all that, but maybe it took everything out of him just to get that victory, and now he's looking at a rematch like, hey, man, if this, like the champ said, if that guy was off his game and I fought my life out. Just imagine what it's going to be like for me to get in the ring and he's on his A game. So, yeah, I definitely think that fight is probably going to go out the window due to Eddie Hearn's reaching out to the Klitschko team today about possible a Joshua fight. So what's your thoughts, JK?
Like I had said, after that first fight, I really don't think that, we're going to see this guy back in the ring. I mean, he's not a true professional fighter in the sense of, being dedicated to the sport. Right. I mean, look at his background and whatnot. And I mean, this is not something, that would necessarily, I can understand what they're saying, that he's losing focus because, I mean, you can tell from his behavior and he was the same guy before the fight that he is now. So, I mean, I would be very shocked if we ever saw him back in the ring again. And that's just my opinion. But Layman, you spoke of him fighting Joshua now. Is that a possible matchup if they do strip Fury of the crown? And would that be, would that be more to Deontay's advantage, knowing that those two have fought each other before he would be able to fight him? Especially, Deontay's been sparring with Klitschko on numerous occasions. So, he is rather familiar with him. But if Klitschko should happen to be Joshua, either way that goes, he gets to see both fighters at their best. So number one, would you like to see this fight made? And, as I said, number two, would this fight be an advantage for Deontay?
So let me make sure I'm hearing you correctly. So you're saying the fight between Joshua and Vladimir, is that the fight you're referring to?
Yes.
I don't want to see that. Well, no, let me take that back. I do want to see that fight. But here's my thing. I would like to see Joshua, in all fairness, with using my experience of a champion, I would like to see Joshua have two or three more fights and then fight Vladimir because, he's still new to being a champion. He don't yet. And don't get me wrong. I think he's the truth, man. I really do. I think he's the only person out there, in my opinion, that could stand in the way of Deontay Wilder if Deontay's not on his game. But right now, to fight Vladimir with all his, and not just his experience as being a champion for the last 10 years or whatnot, but having the experience fighting Joshua, knowing the magnitude and the mental games that he can play with Joshua going into this fight. Right now, I think Joshua needs to build his foundation a little stronger by having at least two fights at the minimum and then fight Vladimir, because I think that's what makes the most sense. But then, here we go. Vladimir coming off of a loss may be to his advantage, because mentally, even though we know Vladimir wasn't in his, my opinion, they're still cast out just to lose a fight, period. But then the other thing is, it might be a good time, because what if it was his age that showed up in that fight and you don't want him to fight somebody else? So, that's really a hard one to say, but I just know if Joshua was to wait one or two fights, even if Klitschko go ahead and defend his title, so what? all that's going to do is make for a bigger payday at the end of the day. You know, now when we talk about Wilder, and it's just my opinion, this me talking, man, I don't think it's going to matter what Klitschko or Joshua do, because right now, when America thinks of a heavyweight champion, they're not thinking about Vladimir anymore, who has stunk up a lot of fights on television with his style that he wouldn't commit until he hurt a guy. Joshua is from England, so just by way of being an American, you naturally want to gravitate to a guy that's from your country. So I think that Wilder has in his favor, you know, the support of America and all fighters. I don't care if you're from England, Germany, or where you're from, gold medal or not, you still want to fight in America. So right now, to say I'm the heavyweight champion of the world, I'm from America, well, I think that he has the ball in his court personally, and I think he got enough experience at this point to go out and beat a Vladimir Klitschko and or Josh. But like I say, as long as he's on his square, as long as he got a guy like Mark Breland and he do everything he wants to do to get ready for that fight, I don't have no doubt in my mind that Wilder wouldn't be successful in fighting anybody out there. And as far as that guy, what was it? What's that? RT? So what's the other heavyweight name? The Cuban guy?
You talking about Luis Ortiz?
Yeah, I don't know enough about him to really talk about him, and I haven't watched enough for him to say what kind of fighter he is. I've heard some people tell me in the gym the kind of guy he is in and out of the ring, but, you know, I ain't seen him in a hard fight. I haven't seen him get fighters that I would say I have a lot of respect for, you know. I can say that about Wilder. You know, he's fought some tough people, in my opinion, for this era. So, again, my is definitely on Deontay Wilder above all the other fighters, you know. I know that Anthony Joshua, well, he got stopped or got beat by what's the heavyweight the from England that fought? He fought Tony Thompson and got beat. He got beat by Tony Thompson twice. And I know he wanted to fight Joshua, and he beat Joshua, as a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken. But just the point I'm making, I think that right now the best viable candidate to be a unified champion out of all the heavyweights right now is Deontay Wilder.
First of all, we're getting kind of close to time here. Does anybody mind if we go over? Does anybody have to go? And I mean, you know.
No, I'm good.
Okay.
If I think you're going to talk about what I think you're about to talk about.
Well, first of all, you know, did you have some thoughts on that since I'm going to go over about, you know, it's about 7:30. I'm not going to try to make it a 2-hour show, but your thoughts on that, Javon? Is that a good matchup? A good matchup, Klitschko and Wilder? I mean, Klitschko and Joshua, and you know, what effect do you think that would have, you know, on a possible matchup with Deontay Wilder for the winner?
I mean, I like that fight. I think it'll answer a lot of questions. It'll test Joshua, and it will let you know it has time caught up with Klitschko. Those are two questions that needs to be answered. You know, is Joshua ready to take over the driver's seat in the heavyweight division next to Deontay Wilder, which I think that would make a mega fight after Joshua defeat Klitschko. If that happened, I think that would make a mega fight for them to unify the titles, and especially if it could happen here on U.S. soil, possibly in Vegas or the Barclays. So, hey, I'm down for it. On to you, JK. PBC.
No, I would love to see that fight. I'm thinking, you know, that it would probably be, you know, in England, more than likely. You know, I mean, it could possibly be in Russia, but, you know, I mean, where it is, I don't think it makes as much difference as to more pertaining to what you said, Javon. You know, it would give a chance for us to see Joshua being tested. And, you know, number two, you know, tested. We would get to know whether or not Klitschko, you know, Father Time has finally caught up with him. And maybe he only has another couple fights in him. Or, you know, maybe he'll do like his brother. And, you know, because of personal reasons, as Layman was talking earlier about his wife and his new child, you know, I mean, you know, there are numerous reasons why he could walk away from the ring. I'm sure he's not fighting for the love of money. So I would love to see what's going on with that fight. Since we're going over, we can talk about a couple other things also.
PBC?
Just for kind of a background, Layman, did you get a chance to read the article that I sent to you?
Yeah, JK, I did. I read the article, yes.
Okay. We're going to talk about that. Believe me,
okay.
We're going to talk about it. But, you know, let's get these fights out of the way because, you know, this kind of goes back to one of the things that I've been saying for quite some time, some of the things that you've been saying, Layman. And like I said, you know, I kind of want to end the show on that because I think it'll tie in with what our first discussion was. So, you know, we'll kind of save that for a minute. but talking about this Pacquiao pay-per-view and Top Rank, Bob Arum, says that he's going to have four championship fights on this pay-per-view. I mean, three. Well, it'll be four the Pacquiao fight. But first of all, let's talk a little bit about the undercard of this Manny Pacquiao, Jesse Vargas main event. The first co-feature would be Nonito Donaire taking on Jesse Magdaleno. Javon, your thoughts on this matchup? You know, what do you think?
It'll be an exciting fight. I've seen Donaire's opponent a couple times. I think it's gonna be an action fight. We're gonna see what Donaire has left in the tank, and you know, I think it's gonna be a good, decent fight.
Layman?
Hey, man, I second that motion. I think it's going to be a great fight. You said good, Brian, but I say great. It'll be a great fight. I think it's going to be from bell one until if it make it to the last bell, it's going to be all action.
Okay. I kind of agree with both of you. I think it's going to be a very action-packed fight. I don't think it's going to go the distance. I'm looking for maybe, you know, eight rounds. As much as, you know, I hate to say it, I think Jesse could pull this out. And this is, you know, when they say styles make fights, this is one of them that really fits that bill. The next fight is Oscar Valdez. Hiroshito or Hiragashi also. You know I haven't heard of this. I haven't seen much of this guy. Osawa. He's a Japanese fighter. He's 31 years old. And he's fighting the title, of course, Oscar Valdez, two-time Olympian. What do you think, Raymond?
Well, I'm not familiar with the Japanese guys. That's the whole thing, man. I would need to get back with you if we can have this conversation next week. I can definitely do some research, and I could better lay out what my thoughts would be on that.
Yeah. Now, the third fight, of course, is the Chinese Olympic gold medalist Zhao Ming against a guy from Thailand, and I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce his name. His last name has more letters than the alphabet, so. Really not going to try to go through that. But I guess why I'm going through this, and like we know, Manny Pacquiao and Jesse Vargas is the main event. And, I mean, Layman, we've seen a lot of pay-per-views, and when most people talk about, when you hear that... Hey man, this pay-per-view is going to have three world title fights, and Manny Pacquiao is going to be the headliner. And then I read the names off to you of these other three titleists. Layman, women's pay-per-view sunk this low.
I could be wrong. I've been wrong plenty of times in the past, but I think that if you look at history, if you look at evolution, nothing stays the same, but yet everything repeats itself. I think that we're at a low point in pay-per-view, and because for one, you don't have the fighters out there who be the salesman of a Floyd Mayweather, or have the energy and excitement of a Mike Tyson. And because you don't have that these days anymore, and then you have people out there like the PBC series, I know the things you guys want to talk about, but at the same time, is offering action-packed fights to guys that don't have padded records but are hungry and want to fight. Now, you can go spend $50, $100, and you're gonna see a guy who was bought in to be slaughtered, or you're going to see a guy with a padded record, same thing, in there to get a check, or a guy who fought his way up to the top, and you spent all that money to find a good fight where you can turn to a dominant regular channel and see two fighters that are hungry and want to be world champions, and they're going to give it all they got, and it's going to cost you absolutely nothing but your time. So I just feel like because pay-per-view was closed circuit before that for so long, it went from closed circuit. Nobody go to closed circuit no more unless you're in Vegas at the fight, and then there's a overflow room, so you would then go. But the point I'm making is that nothing stays the same. Everything changes, nobody goes to get the same for the last 50 years, At some point, you're going to get a part on one side of your head. At some point, you're going to cut it lower. It's going to be higher. So I'm just saying nothing stays the same. So we got to be willing to change, because change brings in new ideas. It brings in a new mindset. You got a new, what they call these millennials. The millennials don't think like, as we would say, us old school, you know, so you got to adapt. You know, the music they listen to today ain't what they listened to even 10 years ago and then 10 years before that. So we have to change. And that's the thing that I think that's always kind of hurt boxing is because they always try to keep boxing the same for so long that the things that made the people in the 30s and the 50s, even the 60s, interested are not the same things that interest people even in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and certainly not today with the different mentalities that the millennials have. So change is good, man, and, you know, I'm in it to win it, so I'm throwing my raft in the water, and I'm just, I ain't got no oars, so I'm just going to go with the flow, baby.
See, I'm glad you didn't go too far with, you know, when you were talking about that. LeBron, when you know, without talking about the PBC side of this, because I'm definitely going to link them up. When I tell you that we're going to have that I'm going to put together a pay-per-view and I'm going to have three world title bouts on it. I want you to pay out, you know, probably a day, maybe 2 days' wages for it, and then I hand this card to you. What's your thoughts?
I just think it's a backlash of Pacquiao Mayweather. The fans are just not willing to come out their pocket after that letdown. If just think about if Mayweather Pacquiao would have been like a Corrales Castillo or like a Morales Barrera, you know, people would be still excited about pay per views, you know. But I just really think that Mayweather Pacquiao, just listening to the fans, listening to different podcasts, that really hurt boxing and set boxing back so bad. That's just my opinion, TK.
All right, well, let's kind of, you know, let's ask the champ. Do you think that was it? Because, I mean, look, everybody knew who Floyd was who he said he was. Floyd was who we have always seen. We have never seen Floyd act like Triple G. So, if you're a boxing fan and you buy this pay-per-view, how can you be disappointed when you know, as a fan, when you know what these two guys are bringing to the table? How can you, when you asked Floyd to bring his best, he brought his best, what he does best. Now, because it's not his responsibility that his opponent didn't bring their best, but Floyd brought his best. He brought, this is what Floyd does. Layman,
I agree, but the fans are looking at it like, they was coming off of two Madonna fights where it was action. Now, they waiting for this fight that's been going on for 5 years, you know, to make. And it's like they got less action in that fight than they got in the two Madonna fights.
Well, yeah.
So you asked, what is your question?
You know, I mean, my question is, if boxing fans knew what they were getting, and they got the best of who they bought, which was Floyd, they got Floyd's best. Floyd did what he did best. So why should boxing fans be disappointed because Floyd didn't do anything that a boxing fan should not have expected.
So are you referring with the Pacquiao fight? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah. I don't think that you boxing fans should have taken that out on the sport because you got what you paid for.
Let me just say this, man. First of all, none of Floyd fans that I've spoken with were disappointed because, as you said to Jabron, you said he does exactly what he says he's going to do. You've never heard him say anything different. But then there were actually points in the fight where if you go and watch the tape, he actually backed up Pacquiao. So I don't understand, other than to say the people that have a problem with Floyd are the people that are Pacquiao fans. There's nobody who's a fan, I mean a fan of Floyd, that you're going to hear, oh, he didn't take the fight, because Floyd has been the most consistent fighter in our lifetime. He's done exactly what he said he was going to do. He didn't do more. He didn't do less. Well, actually, he did do more, because I never expected him, as his daddy was telling him, to come forward. He actually backed Pacquiao up. So anybody that has a problem with him is either because their favorite fighter or their fighter in Pacquiao didn't deliver, you know, because everybody had these expectations that he was going to do what he's going to come and destroy and do all. He didn't, you know, and I won't even get into the reasons why I believe Pacquiao didn't deliver, but I'm just going to say I know things that 99.9% of people don't know. I'm going to just leave it at that. But at the same time, again, getting back to Floyd, he was consistent. He showed up and he showed out. He backed Pacquiao up at times. But people, you know, it's never enough. And that's what I try to tell these young fighters and these young champions. Don't worry about the people. At the end of the day, you got to make sure you're happy. And that's why I respect Vladimir. That's why I respect Lennox Lewis. Because when Emanuel Stewart changed their style, because they both used to be killers. They come right to you, almost like a Riddick Bowe when he was with Eddie Futz. And he would fight you. But then, does it really make sense for a guy that tall to be fighting, you know, the fight of his opponent? So they were educated on how to better win and take less damage. And that's the same thing that Floyd did. He went out there and he was consistent upon the way he beat guys. The object of boxing is to hit without getting hit. Now, if you want to see violence as far as brutality, well, then you need to go find some MMA fighters that want to stand up and try to be like us and be boxers. But if you want to see a guy hit without getting hit, that's going to use his footwork, that's going to roll his shoulder, then we have a guy by the name of Floyd Mayweather, 49-0. So that's my take on it.
Most definitely. Last fight I want to talk about, really, really, before I get into our real discussion. Triple G and Danny Jacobs talking about December 10th. I'm sure this has a lot to do with the fact that Alvarez is done for the year. What do you think about this fight? And is this fight too soon for Danny? Start with you, Jabron.
Well, hey, it's time to step up. You know, he's undefeated. He has the belt. He has a belt. He has confidence. He's on a winning streak. I like the fight.
me personally, I like the fight. I want to see how Triple G is going to react to someone who's athletic and who has a little pop in their punch, because the people that he's been in front of that had a little pop, they was not boxers, you know. They was come forward fighters, you know. Even though Curtis Stevens is, you know, John David Jackson is turning him now into a boxer, when they fought, he was just a fighter. So I think it's gonna be an interesting fight. We have to see, can Jacobs' chin withstand Triple G. So I'm excited, and I just can't wait if they get the fight made. Your thoughts, champ?
Well, thank you, brother. I just, you know, Triple G, he's really been looking solid, and I've not seen him show a chink in his armor as of yet. I just think that I don't think that anybody that I can think of right at this moment that could beat him other than a boy from Oakland, Andre Ward. I think that's the only person I think that could possibly beat him, because I don't think that a tough guy or a guy that could take a good punch, I think to beat a guy like Triple G, you got to almost be like a Porno Whitaker when he fought Julio Cesar Chavez. And we all know that Whitaker won that fight, but, you know, that ain't to take away from Chavez, but I'm just saying, let's take a smart fighter. I don't think that, you know, I think that Triple G is a well-rounded fighter. You know, he takes a punch, he got good boxing skills, he can punch like a mule, and I think it's his time. But, again, the only person I see out there opposing him would be Andre Ward. At a catchweight.
You know how much I hate catchweights, Layman. But but anyway. But you know, I would rather see Danny Jacobs fight Keith Thurman, and the winner fight Kennedy, and that's for the experience of both.
Keith Thurman. Keith Thurman and Danny Jacobs.
Well, Keith Thurman's talking about fighting Triple G, so what's, you know, I mean, you know, if he can fight Triple G, why can't he fight Danny Jacobs?
Oh man, I ain't heard that. Well, Thurman better go sit down.
But you know, well, but this would be a good payday for Thurman if he got it. But anyway. You know, I kind of like Danny Jacobs, and I would kind of give him the same send the same message to him that you sent to my boy Willie Monroe Tuesday. Jabron, you know, sit on the belt for a minute, you know, fight, you know, get your little experience under your belt, because Triple G is definitely a different animal. Danny has some pop, but I don't want to see Danny end up having the same thing done to him that he did to Peter Quillen. So I would like to see Danny get at least one or two more fights under his belt, just merely for the experience. And I'm not saying, you know, that I don't think that Danny, you know, is not in the same class, but I just think that he just doesn't have enough experience. And you know, I think you know, like Willie Monroe, you know what I mean, Abel Sanchez and Triple G's team are very, very savvy. You know, if they want you right now, that means that they think that you're not quite ready. You know, that, you know, so I mean, you know, they feel somewhere that they have an advantage. Abel is old school, and he's not going to he's not right now. You know, this is his cash cow, and definitely you know, his golden goose. He's not going to just try to throw it away. But now, getting back to this pay per view card, I sent both you gentlemen an article written by Mr. Dan Raphael. Appeared in the article that I sent you. I sent you from ESPN Sports, and it says what has happened to premier boxing champions. And you know, after you read all of these different things talking about, you know, how the money has been shortened, how the time for the fighters has been shortened, and all of this. And you see, you know, all of the criticism heaped upon Al Haymon in this program, which is free and on free TV. And then you see this article written on Bob Abrams' pay-per-view card. Are you trying to tell me that the same thing that's happening in the streets right now is not happening within the boxing industry? And I'm not saying that Dan Raphael is racist or nothing like that, but, I mean, how can you criticize something that's free and then you bring me this garbage and ask me to pay for it? Your thoughts, LeBron.
Well, yeah, that's a good one, TK. That is a double standard, I would say, for them to comb through just reading the article, how it was just being so specific, you know, nitpicking at, you know, about some the fighters only fought on the program once and all these fighters just sitting on the shelf. But at the same time, what about the youth? In order for people to become stars, they got to get some type of exposure. So you're just trying to tell me that program's supposed to only be made just for superstars, you know? And a pay-per-view fight, I feel like, supposed to be like a coming-out party for people who done went up that ladder to get there, you know, and that's going to be recognizable, that you're going to know what you read in that card. If you go to any casual fan in a barbershop tomorrow, all they're going to know is Manny Pacquiao. I'm sorry, Jesse Vargas, but unless they're from Brooklyn, they know Jesse beat, you know, Ali. But they're just not going to know them. So with that being said, my question would be, what are we going to do about it?
Well, if he only made if he said he lost $100,000 on the pay per view with Crawford and Pastore, then he should be ready to lose everything on this fight here. Because, I mean, you know, this $20 is too much for this to charge me for this fight. You know, I hate to say it, but you know, I can watch MMA for free and be more excited than I am about this card. You know, even though I, you know, do this program and know the show, I mean, come on, you know, when you tell me you're going to bring three world champions, you know, you didn't tell me that you were bringing three world champions in classes that people really don't care about and the champions that no one knows. You know, I'm expecting to see the when we bought pay-per-view back in the day, we were expecting to see the best of the best, and this does not fulfill that act, that idea to me. Champ, let's give you the last word on this before we get out of here, my man.
And you know, I'm going to be nice. I'm going to be nice.
No. If you want to be nice, we got to get send you to another show. I'm not. I didn't make a reputation. I didn't make my reputation being nice. And you know, I mean, this show is to talk about the truth. You know, not only, you know, our social views, but what the hell is going on in the sport that we love. So, I mean, you can be nice if you want to. I understand, you know, you got public relations and what and all that, you know, but on this show, you can be yourself. So whatever you want to say, my man, you know, you can put it out.
Well, listen, man, to just, you know, I guess to take a famous quote by Jack Nicholson, you can handle the truth. Well, not you, but they can handle the truth because, you know, they're not in a lot of the people out there in boxing are not in our shoes. When I say wrong complexion for the protection, you know, man, the thing about Mr. Heyman is he's a private person. He, not only does he not put his personal life out there, he don't put his business out there. And so everybody, including these, just like you remember how Prince wouldn't do these interviews for a very long time, and, man, they came up with everything you could think of, and their imaginations ran wild. Well, it's the same thing all over, man, with Al, because he don't deal with the media. He don't do interviews. So, you know, people going to find dirt, and they're going to look, and if they think it's dirt just because it's brown, it could be brass, or it could be gold, but they're going to make it in the dirt. And so, you know, the thing about Mr. Heyman, he's a very smart man, and, you know, all these allegations and rumors, I just say, you know, you guys just gotta sit back And let it play out, man. You know, and then if these allegations, the things that we're hearing is wrong, well then you know who not to follow again, because they're just like the Inquirer. They'll print anything to make a dollar. So don't waste your time, you know, being misled, so to speak. Almost like going to church. But man, just on a serious note, man, I believe that the way that Al Heyman is handling boxing with his fighters. I mean, when you guys were talking earlier, I remember being number one in the world for over a year and not even being allowed to fight. I remember going from number four after beating Nate Jones to become number one and them sending me a letter. And I remember even before that, even when I was ranked in the top 10, Don King wouldn't even let me fight for a whole year, just for some personal reasons that he had. So you can't point the finger necessarily at a fighter for not being active. And then, you know, with a guy like Al, like I say, show me his fighters that are unhappy, please. And I know without a shadow of a doubt, if any of his fighters ever wanted to leave, Al would be like, hey, I wish you the best. You know, because he's that type of man. He's a real man. I mean, he don't come with some hook underneath what he's offering. You know, he's in it to help people, man. This guy don't have to do this. He can go and buy an island somewhere probably and the rest of his life. But the fact that he's here is he's trying to be what I consider my big brother, you know. And what he's done is he's lent his big brotherism, if you will, to help people, man. And the people that have a problem with him are the people who are opposing him, or the reporters that he won't give interviews to. So, you know, that's where all this is really coming from at the end of the day, man. But it'll all, you know, at the end of the day, they say the cream always rise to the top, and you'll see.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, you know, we would all like to think in 2016, you know, that the double standard, you know, is a stock market term, but unfortunately, it's not. With that being said, I want to thank you guys for staying over, and you know. Sorry that I get caught up in social issues sometime. I know this is a boxing show, but, you know, we all still have to live in this world. And, you know, sometimes my views are archaic, and I'm glad we have a young man like Jabron, you know, that can kind of tell me what's going on in the modern day and age. And then, you know, we have you know, one of our black heroes, you know, heavyweight champion of the world, Mr. Layman Brewster. So, you know, I feel very blessed, you know, being able to kind of have my toe in both worlds, even at this late stage in my life. And I want you guys to know, you know, even though I may stray off of boxing sometimes, you know, it's just on issues and things that, I think that we should bring attention to, just like we, you know, talk about the other side of boxers and showing that they're human. I think that sometimes we need to do the same. Jabron, your last thoughts. I kind of jumped up on my soapbox there, but your final thoughts for the evening, and then we'll let the champ give us the final word and close it out for us.
I'd like to thank you, JK, and thank you, Champ, sharing this time with me, and thank the listeners for listening in. Just keep supporting boxing. Keep your head up. Stay positive. You can find me on Facebook, Jabron, J-A-B-R-A-N, Clemon, C-L-E-M-O-N, and that's on Facebook. Throw it to you, Champ.
Well, I just want to say thank you for everybody to take the time to tune in, and above all, you know, thank God for allowing to have a show like this. And I thank you, JK, because of the fact that what you do, man, first of all, we all know entertainment can be a diversion, a distraction with all that's going on in the world, and really keep you from being concerned with the things of the world, you know, and the fact that we even get to talk about those and incorporate them. And, you know, I just say, as a black man, I'm grateful to you, brother, because it allows me to talk about the dark side of boxing, the elephant in the room, the pink elephant that nobody wants to talk about. And that's some of the struggles that we go through as black people. And it ain't about race in terms of boxing, but I'm just saying, like, the things that I face, the things that other people's face, even like I said, like Al Haymon, if he was a white man, he'd be held as the greatest man in boxing since Muhammad Ali, in my opinion, in the opinion of others. I just want to say thank you, brother, and, you know, for good or for bad, I'm Layman Brewster. You can follow me or not follow me at Raymond, L-A-M-O-N, Brewster, B-R-E-W-S-T-E-R. That's at Facebook. That's at Instagram. That's at Twitter. Or you can always catch me here, man, because, you know, I just like the fact that we have real talk. I ain't got to be fake. I ain't got to chuckle like it's something, and it ain't even funny. We keep it 100, and I love that, and I'm going to ride with you to the ship sink.
All right, brother. Well, hey. Glad to have you along, and, you know, hopefully we can keep the oars above water. So I thank both of you guys. I thank the audience for sticking along with us. I saw quite a few lights go out when we started talking about real things. But, hey, you know, if that happens, then so be it. Hey, we appreciate everyone listening. Look forward to talking to everyone on Tuesday night on the Pugilist Corner. You can catch me and Jabron Tuesday, and we'll be talking to the champ next Sunday. So have a great night, everyone. We'll see you next week.